Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 234 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of December 28th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and tonight is the big night. I'm joined this evening by my prestigious co-host, Mr. Dan Ryan.
I actually, since my paperwork is official, would prefer if you could address me as Minister Dan Ryan.
Sure.
Because that's a thing I am.
Father Ryan.
Father Ryan. I'm going to have to start speaking in an Irish Catholic accent. I don't know what that means, but
please do.
I don't know. Evan yelled at me last time I started accents, so.
And it was funny.
Yeah, well, that's true.
We are not joined tonight by Dean DeFalco, because he is at a Christmas party, I think.
Thank God. Who's somebody I have a direct line to now.
So. That actually took me a second. We are here for the fifth annual, this for 5 years, the
Jesus.
Fifth annual SAGJGLD Awards, the award show whose name gets stranger every year we use it.
That's right. when was the last time Joseph Gordon-Levitt was relevant?
He was half relevant last year when he was talking about making that Fraggle Rock movie.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I didn't hear from him again for a while, but you know what? Yeah. We're just going to keep using it. We've come this far, Dan.
We 5 years, Chris.
5 years in, we can't get enough of it.
Can't get enough of the SAGJGLD?
That's right, we can't. We're going to be giving out our awards for the very best video games we played this year. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. 2018 was a very different year from the now legendary 2017, but not necessarily in a bad way. There were blockbusters, to be sure, but the indie scene shined bright this year, brighter this year, perhaps, than any recent year prior. I'm very curious to hear exactly what Dan has to say, so let us get to work. I guess real quick before we do, how are you, Dan?
Pretty good, man. You know, it's the holiday season, Chris, and
ooh, yeah, it is.
My town does some really cute stuff. We had a Polar Express day in town today, and the kids took a train ride and got a toy at the toy store and did a whole thing and did a maze. There was a candy cane maze set up at the church that was surprisingly heavy on the religious iconography.
Really?
I mean,
who saw that coming?
The herald, the angel sang. It was right there in front of your face, but there were candy canes at the end of it.
Well,
so it's really nice. I love this time of year. I know you do too.
I really do.
It's just such a wonderful wonderful thing, and like it doesn't leave much time for like playing video games or anything like that. Of like, there's so much other stuff to do. But I mean, not only are we rapidly approaching the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christopher, but it was Ferg's birthday.
It was Ferg's birthday,
and that's somehow even more important.
It is to me.
So,
Ferg, happy birthday.
Ferg.
Yes, from the Stone Age Gamer podcast to Ferg from the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast. A most excellent fellow. Happy birthday. From the bottom of our hearts.
The very bottom.
The very bottom. Yeah, I was outside. I hung up Christmas lights again this year.
Excellent.
I took things a little bit further. I haven't gotten up the bravery to get all the way to the second floor of my house with the Christmas lights. Because I am deathly afraid of heights.
Are you really?
Oh, yes. Terribly afraid of heights.
Wow. I had no idea.
Not my thing. I actually got one of those Christmas light grabber thingies. It's like a big extendo pole. And I got it last year, and it broke.
Aww.
And then I got it again this year because I was like, all right, I'll get the ladder again from, you know, I'll borrow it from my friend. And then I thought, nah, you know what? I'm going to take another chance on this stick thing because I don't really want to climb up a ladder. So I got it again, and it worked like a charm this year, except since I got a new roof, the new shingles, because my, you know, it clipped onto the shingles last year because I had like three layers of shingles because my roof was a pile of garbage. But now I have a new roof with only one layer of shingles, and they weren't thick enough to hold the clips. So I had to get up on a short ladder and really get up there and kind of clip them on and rig it the rest of the way around. But this year, instead of ending at the side of my house, I looped back around and I covered my door, and it looks really snazzy.
That's super exciting.
And I was at the drugstore earlier getting more medicine for this cough that won't go away.
Yeah, and Penny has the same thing. She's been coughing for like, it feels like 6 months at this point.
Yeah, it's, I mean, do you, any of our listeners know I've been coughing for months. I was at the doctor earlier today. They prescribed me more stuff, and I was at the drugstore, and all their Christmas decorations were 50% off. So I got more of those candy canes you put in your yard that light up.
Yeah, I got love those.
Another row of them for like $6. Yeah.
Love those.
Yeah.
Stock we, up. The way our house isn't really conducive to lights. So we just go the cheap way and throw up the projector thing.
Oh yeah. Those things are cool.
But I like it. You know, like right now there's Santa Claus and like a reindeer and a package and shit floating around on the outside of the house.
So in case the listeners haven't figured this out yet, we are recording this before Christmas, even though this episode is coming out after Christmas. So Dan and I don't know what we got for Christmas yet.
Well, I mean, we can kind of guess probably.
I actually can't. I have no idea what Karen got me for Christmas.
I don't know if I can either.
I have no idea.
Honey, do you want to tell me what you got me for Christmas?
Since according to the podcast, it's after Christmas.
Yeah, since the podcast is after Christmas, so I can, you know, be topical for the listeners and be like, oh, so I got this and it was awesome. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to know.
All right. This has all been fun, but we've got a lot. Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about that's not specifically nonsense. So let's get to work. So we're going to handle things the way we did last year, starting the show with our individual personal awards. Then we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to do our top three games of the year. So get comfortable. We get this show on the road. Dan, you are alphabetically first.
I am.
By first
and
name.
And first in our hearts.
So you get to go first. What is your first individual award?
My first individual award is for Celeste, and it is the award for game that I wish I had played this year.
I was all shocked. I was like, did he play it?
Nope. Didn't play it. But everything I see, because like, I mean, there's so many games that come out every year. So like, you know, I'm looking at lists and stuff, like trying to refresh my memory of like what games actually came out this year. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I'm seeing a bunch of like other top 10 lists and whatever. And Celeste is just all over. And I'm like, God damn it. I mean, I really like that one. And like, I mean, that kind of wins like a co-award with Dead Cells, because somehow
Dead
I just
Cells.
Didn't
if I
play
had that...
either of those this year. And man, that bums me out.
Well, really, that very same award for me goes to, like, I mean, a handful of games. Obviously, it goes to Spider-Man and God of War.
yeah, see, like, at least I miss, like, the little indie ones where it's like, ah, right, you know.
Well, you know, it's, well, that's the thing. See, if given the choice between playing Spider-Man and God of War or Dead Cells and Hollow Knight, I would choose Dead Cells and Hollow Knight. Of the four games that I didn't play this year that I really, really wanted to play, those four are the top, and I really would put Dead Cells, then Hollow Knight, then Spider-Man, then God of War would be my order of the no quarter. My order of no quarter. To quote Shovel Knight.
Well, that's fair. I mean, I can't really argue with that. But yes,
and like, I really badly want to play all four of those games. It's not like there's a big gap between them. It's just, you know, if I had to choose, that's where I'd put them.
Yeah, like it's one of those things. Like, I looked at my my playtime on Hollow Knight the other day, just to kind of see where I was, and I have put so far into that game 27 hours. I don't know when I put those 27 hours into that game, but like, I look at that and I'm like, man, I'm not even finished with that. I don't even think I'm really all that close to being finished with that. I'm certainly still having just as much fun with it as I was. I mean, the fact that it's a Metroidvania-style game, I'm having more fun, if we're being honest, because I'm, you know, more powerful and all of that stuff. So, like, even if I purchased Celeste and Dead Cells, I don't know when I would have played it.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, well, that really, so, that comes, that's a lot of it for me. I mean, I wish I had played one of those games instead of Save Me, Mr. Taco, but
it is what it is.
We all make mistakes.
We do.
We do.
All right, so that's my first award, Chris.
All right, I should write that down. So my first award, my first individual award, is for best use of a spittoon. And that goes to West of Loathing. I don't think there's anything in any medium or at all in the past 365 days that I laughed at harder than the spittoons in West of Loathing.
That, yeah, I mean, God, that's another one, you know, that's another game that's like, I mean, that looks awesome and is like, it looks like it's right up my alley, but when would I have had time for that?
That is the question. There were just ridiculous amounts of great games this year. Again, super thrilled that I have the Switch because I used every opportunity. I played a boatload of Smash Brothers at the doctor's office today, you know?
Nice.
I play it any opportunity I can just to crack it open for just a few minutes at a time. But West of Loathing was, you know, it's one of those games. It's like, it's not so extraordinarily well crafted in every respect. Like, it's from a gameplay standpoint, like the actual game itself, the turn-based RPG is just super bare bones. So it's not going to win like this was an amazing experience kind of game of the year type stuff, but it is so well written and so just, it knows exactly what it is and is so good at what it is doing that it is absolutely worthy of an award. And I just had to make up one for it because I have so many fond memories of playing that this year. It was like, the game's just ridiculous. And I know it's all stick figures and stuff, but it looks so nice. It sounded really nice. But again, like, the music wasn't anything super special, so like it didn't get any, you know, best song of the years or anything out of me, but it really worked for everything that it was. Like, this game, top to bottom, is as perfect a game as it could be. And it was absolutely hysterical, particularly the spittoons were just unbelievably funny, just out of this world funny. And I tip all of my cowboy hats and cactus hats and Pope hats and any other hats that I found. I tip all of them, including the spittoon itself, to West of Loathing.
The spittoon itself. Yeah, right. I mean, man, like, one of these days, I feel like I'm going to get to it, and I feel like I'm really going to like it, but, I mean, maybe not. I want to, Chris.
Well, what I actually started doing this year was keeping a spreadsheet, you know? I just kept an Excel spreadsheet, not an Excel, actually a Google Docs spreadsheet, whatever. But I just updated it all year of like, okay, this is a list of all the games that are out now that I am interested in. And anytime a game got announced or I saw something, I'd write it down on the list. Like, these are games that are coming that I want. These are games that are out that I want. These are the games that I have. These are the games that I've beaten this year. Like, I just had to organize my thoughts so that I could get through as many games as I could. And I did. I got through more games this year than I did last year. And last year I got through more games than I did in like the previous 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm keeping myself organized. I wish the Switch was a little better at doing that itself. Like, I wish I could just create folders. Wouldn't that be special? But
wouldn't that be something?
Seriously, I can create folders on my Wii U and 3DS.
I mean, you have to imagine it's coming, right?
You have to, right? But then again, how long were you waiting to be able to change your PSN name?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't give a shit, but...
But it's one of those like things like, yeah, you should be able to do that. And it was years. Like, we don't know why these companies make these decisions, but...
Yeah, that's
I got
that's
my fingers crossed. But yes, West of Loathing is a phenomenal game and very well worthy of my first award of the year. Dan, you're up.
All right, game that I had the most fun with on the Vita, because that is still a thing I play from time to time, and that is the Brazilian beat 'em up 99 Vitas. that we had talked about when when it first came out. Did you ever end up getting that?
I actually didn't. I forgot all about it. It didn't make my spreadsheet.
Yeah, I mean, just such a fun little beat 'em up, you know, just a really, really awesome throwback from a developer that I had no familiarity with before the start of the year, you know, and a free PS Plus game that just kind of popped out, and it was cross-buy with Vita. It's a Vita game that was cross-buy with PS3 and PS4, so it was like, fuck, please play this game. You know, we really want you to, and it was so worth it. You know, and you know, we popped it on the PS4 a couple times, and Tiff and I played it, and I played it with the kids. And it was just a really, really fun throwback experience that it wasn't too hard, you know. I mean, it was the right amount of challenging for what a beat-em-up should be, and, you know, had a lot of the old school, like, pattern recognition in the bosses and ridiculous over-the-top, you know, boss fights and that sort of stuff. It was just great. Just a really, really great little game that I think is still like $10 or whatever. You know, I mean, please, please, if you haven't played this game, absolutely find it. It's on Switch. It's on PS3, PS4, and Vita. There's
Xbox
no
One.
Excuse not to. I think it's on Xbox One.
It certainly is.
It's on Xbox One. I mean, there's really, really no excuse not to play this game. Super fun.
Doesn't have its price.
Yeah, it might even be on Steam, you know.
Probably is. Yeah, Nintendo doesn't have the price listed on their website, but again, I gotta add this. This is really neat. I didn't realize this. The box, the official cover art for this game is modeled after a early Sega Genesis box art.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the little black and white, the little black checker going on back on there. That's
awesome.
Pretty sweet. Oh, it's $9.99. There it is.
There you go.
Sweet. I'll be sure to throw that onto my vast wish list for the Switch. Maybe I'll get it if anybody gets me any eShop cards for Christmas.
There you go.
Because you can never have too many beat-em-ups in your life.
You really can.
You really can. All right, my next individual award. This was one of the ones that I was really happy to do last year, so I'm happy to do it again, and it's for Best Trailer. I remember last year I gave this to Sonic Mania because... it was just this wonderfully nostalgic trailer that just made me feel feelings. And this year that goes to Nintendo Labo.
Yeah.
That first trailer was, and still is, incredible. I just had recently had a conversation with a friend of mine that was interested in buying a Switch for her son for Christmas. And she was asking me some questions about it. And her son, I think, is 10. And I'm like, all right, well, that's the perfect age for this stuff. Does he like building things? And she was like, yeah, he likes building stuff. So I just sent her a link to that trailer. And she's like, oh my God, he builds things out of cardboard all the time. This is incredible. And I was like, yes.
Perfect.
Perfect. It was really the unbelievable creativity of the whole thing. Just watching them build the piano and the bird and all the different little things. And it was the combination of that and that music just really nailed it. I know a lot of people immediately started making fun of this because, you know, the video game community at large is extraordinarily jaded and cynical
and toxic.
But really, I mean, we remember when this stuff was announced, I was talking about on the show, I was, you know, hook, line, and sinker right from the get-go. Like, this is such a brilliant idea. And it's not for the people that are complaining about this. Clearly, it's just not even remotely targeted at those people. I didn't buy it. I mean, I don't have anyone to play it with, but I love that it exists. And I really wish that my son was old enough to get into it, because if he was a little bit older, I absolutely would have bought it. Because, and I've loved a couple of people, Brendan from Apathetic Enthusiasm, he's been doing these with his kids, and like I've seen him consistently. Like, I'll play my Switch, I see him online playing Labo. Dave DiIorio, one of Geekade's writers, he bought it, and again, I see him on a lot. Like, the people that bought this have put some time into it, and that's wonderful.
I really hope people are enjoying it. You know, we didn't end up getting it. You know, and the kids were pretty into it, or pretty into the idea. So I guess that makes us, you know, terrible parents who don't buy our kids anything.
It just means you don't buy your kids everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's
who
really
can?
That's really what it comes down to. It's just like, it was one more thing, and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't think of anything that I wanted in my house less than than that.
And, you know, it's space consuming, and it was also not cheap.
No, it was not.
There was a pretty great deal on it at Best Buy around Black Friday, where you could get any two Labo kits for $100. I was like, yeah, okay, that's a pretty sweet deal. But it's similar to, Starlink. It was one of those things that I didn't necessarily want to pay full price for it, like the $75 for the whole thing. I would have been willing to just to support it. But, you know, when it came down to that game being $35, I was like, well, yeah, that's absolutely a price I should pay for that game.
Yeah.
And at $50 a pop, that's exactly the price that I would be happy to pay for Labo, you know, if I had a use for it.
Right. Which you don't.
Which I don't. But that trailer, I watched that trailer a ton of times this year. It was just an incredible trailer. And I wish that the whole thing was more successful for Nintendo. I don't think it was a failure. I think the thing did pretty well from what I've read, but I don't think it got anywhere near what Nintendo was hoping it would do.
Yeah.
Which I guess isn't a terrible surprise. It was a big risk, and big risks don't always pay off, but I like that they're in a position to take those kinds of risks.
I do too. That I more appreciated the chutzpah that it took to be like, yeah, make shit out of cardboard. It's going to be dope. Play with it. You know, and I do imagine what you're saying, like, is pretty accurate, and like, people who have played this actually really do love it, but, you know, it's just, even at $100, that's still kind of a steep.
It is. I mean, $100. If it was $50, if they didn't have to be buy two for $100, if it was just $50 a pop, I think that would have changed the landscape a little bit. And there are a lot of Switches out there, but this came out, again, pretty early in the Switch's life. And even though it was a very good selling thing, I hope Nintendo sticks with it, because I feel like this is one of those things that could be, I don't know if evergreen's really the right word for it. Mostly because this stuff takes up so much retail space.
Yeah.
Like, the boxes are kind of very big. Mm-hmm. So, but if it's something they keep releasing new versions of, or even re-releasing the older stuff, I see it having legs the more systems that are out there, if they just keep refreshing it.
I hope
so. It's a really
so.
Neat idea. Yeah.
All right, you're up. I would like to give my next award. This is the EA Games Poor Sportsmanship Award. and that is going to be to the continual abuse of microtransactions in video games.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it so much. Like, it...
Yeah, microtransactions get the biggest, fattest, hairiest thumbs down for me.
Because, like, here's the thing, okay? And here's why I have such an issue with it. Because I know that somewhat flies in the face of Puzzle & Dragons, which is a game that I don't know if you've heard, but I'm kind of into that game, okay?
You've mentioned it once or twice.
Once or twice. And that game does have quite a bit of investment potential in it.
But...
Okay.
If my recollection is not wrong, that game is either extremely inexpensive or free to play.
It is free to play.
There you go.
You know, I've been playing it for 3 years and have spent like less than $200 on it. So, I mean, I know that sounds like a big, like you spent $200 on one game, but if it's something that you have legitimately played every single day,
you've gotten more than $200 worth of entertainment out of that game.
I honestly have. Now, here's the problem that I have. When you look at things like Fortnite, I think is one of the biggest perpetrators of this right now. I am an adult, right? I have my own money. So when I talk to my wife and I'm like, honey, please, you know, because even though I'm an adult with my own money, I still... okay the purchases of things in Puzzle and Dragons, or, you know, any sort of microtransactions. But why companies can get this award this year is because things like Fortnite are marketed to children.
Mm-hmm.
And those children don't have money of their own. And yes, we can get into the issues of parenting and all of those things, but like as a company, I kind of believe that you should want to make a profit, but also not be a dick about it and market your shit, your addictive, you know, stuff to little kids.
Yeah.
And when you know that little kids are playing your game, putting in, because all of the stuff in Fortnite is cosmetic. You don't need any of it. Mm-hmm. However, make no mistake that they know exactly what they're pushing out with all of the skins and all of the upgrades and all of that stuff, because it's little kids bragging about who has what, and it's not cool.
It's predatory in nature.
It's not fucking cool. Just
flat out. Now, I mean, there's a certain amount to be said for free-to-play games that offer microtransactions, and microtransactions are not, I think, quite as bad as loot boxes.
Sure.
But it is still, like a lot of the mobile market, where you have these games for kids, and then they're like, well, here, buy all... It's that kind of stuff that's been going on forever. Like, grab your mommy's credit card and send your order to...
Yeah.
We used to get that stuff on like, crappy infomercials and stuff like that. Yeah. So, yes, there is definitely an argument to be made for the parenting side of things. But yeah, a lot of microtransactions, and particularly Fortnite, are kind of nasty. I'll definitely give you that. I don't think I'm as hard on microtransactions if the game is free to play in the first place. What bothers me is when you get full $60 price games that then lump the microtransactions on you. And I'm not talking about like DLC packs or even a season pass. I'm talking about, you know,
the Star Wars stuff from a couple years ago, the Red Dead Redemption 2 stuff from this year.
I mean, even, especially like right now, the one that's really, really pissing me off is Street Fighter V with its ads. Like, you got a lot of nerve with that. Now, I get there's the argument to be made is that like the ads are they're promoting things like tournaments and all this community type stuff. Like, yeah, some of them are. And that stuff's great, but that shouldn't be. Like, those should just be there anyway. That's
right.
That's not something that, you know, that's not a weirdo service kind of thing. Like, if you want to promote those things, then promote those things. But, you know, I don't need, like, you know, Sprite logos on Balrog's gloves or anything like that. And I know you can just turn it off, but it's just, it's the gall of the idea of, like, well, you can get more fighter gold if you allow these ads. Like, that's just dirty.
Yeah, I just don't care for that. That's I don't just, care for that.
Mm-mm, yeah. No, no, thank you. So that was an interesting award, and I concur.
I think that's my only negative award for this evening.
Nice. Yeah, I don't think I have any actual negative awards this year.
Yeah, I don't think I have any other, like, I'm going to show you how much better I am than you awards. Unlike the last couple of years.
All right, my next individual award goes to best game at making me care about geometric shapes, just shapes and beats. So here's what I specifically wanted to award this game for, is not just for being an awesome, awesome rhythm game, but I wanted to award this game for, like, actually making me care about the shapes in the game. There's... Mm. The whole purpose of the game is about this, like, corrupting pink stuff that's taking over all the blue stuff. And there's this blue square that helps you out. And he's got kind of a little tear under his eye. And he's kind of sad, but kind of happy when you're happy. And there's a certain point towards the end of the game where that blue guy gets thrown into the pink stuff and gets corrupted. And I was genuinely sad by that. Like, I was really upset. Like, no, don't do it to that guy. I mean, you've seen it happen to everything else in this game. All the other places, all the other things, all the other trees, all the happy, weirdo little creatures. But not that guy. He's been your friend since the beginning. I can't explain it. This game was nuts. This game was really, really nuts and really, really special. And I don't think it got nearly as much of the recognition it deserved. I really, really enjoyed the music. I feel like a lot of the music in the game I probably wouldn't have liked as much had it been just something I heard without the connection to the game, which
without
is an interesting
context.
Without the context, it is very, very dancey, and I do like dance music, but probably not as much without this kind of visual connection to it.
Sure,
but really, at the end of the day, this was such a rewarding game to play through. Like, I really, really enjoyed my time with it. It was oddly profound, and I just needed to give this game an award. So there you go.
It sounds very similar to like Thomas Was Alone, which is not something you played, right?
No, I haven't played that.
Okay, because Thomas Was Alone was the same kind of thing where you're just like squares and rectangles and all of this stuff, and you have to like make their way out of, you know, like it's maybe a factory or it's maybe like a post-apocalyptic kind of thing. Like there's a lot of deep storytelling going on in there. And you're like, why am I on the verge of tears almost about this fucking square who thinks she's a superhero? Like, why do I give a shit about this? But I did. You know what I mean? Like, I cared. I cared a lot. And it's kind of fascinating when games can do that kind of stuff to you.
Yeah, this game being able to pull that out of me, I thought was really impressive. And, you know, the game is the game's hard. It's got its flaws, but for the love of cheese and crackers, I was really quite an experience, and I will remember that game very fondly for a very long time. I wish I had all the time in the world so that I could go back and play all these other, you know, parts of it, because there's a lot more to the game besides the actual story. But it constantly surprised me of being like, you know, the game starts off like very map screen and levels, you know. Here's your map. You move your icon around on the map and there you go. But then they made the moving around the map actually part of playing the game sometimes, where it just be like, and now you're being attacked on the map and you need to move through this map as fast as you can, like going from icon to icon, or the thing's going to get you. Like, it broke those kind of conventions repeatedly. And it was very, very affecting and very effective. Highest marks.
Well, that is pretty fucking awesome.
I concur. What you got? What's next?
All right. So,
how many more do you have?
Before my top three, four.
Okay, I have three more, so okay. Go for it.
Game that I had the most fun watching, even though I kind of suck at it still, is FighterZ.
I agree, 100%.
Because, man, do I like playing that game and just kind of looking at it and then being like, oh, fuck, I'm getting my ass kicked. Oh, damn it.
I'm so bummed that's not going to be at Evo this year, because I just love I love watching that game. I love watching people play that game. It's so cool.
It is so gorgeous. It is so gorgeous to look at. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I think it might be a little bit boring to watch like at Evo or something like that, because there is... I don't know, like, high-level play of that game, I guess, is really fun to watch, but, like, there's still just a lot of, like, I'm going to trap you in this corner, you know? Yeah. And that is one of the reasons why I stopped playing it as fervently as I was. Mm-hmm. But, man, is that game gorgeous.
And that, like, corner trapping kind of thing, like, those long, long combos that are, you know, much like you, the reason I don't play it more or even attempted to play it like online, are so much more fun to watch than they were in Marvel vs. Capcom 3 or Infinite. Like, that game just became really boring to watch. This game, like, at the end of the day, you're just looking back like, that was a sick combo, man. That was awesome. That looked awesome. I liked that a lot.
Yeah. And they've done a really good job with the DLC for that game, like putting in cool characters that you would actually want to play as. I mean, you're always like, there has been relatively frequent complaining online of like, you know, oh, it's just more Gokus and Vegeta. Well, of course it is.
Yeah, but dude, obviously. That made me so mad when people were complaining about like season one Goku and Vegeta. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah,
because
that's awesome.
They fight so completely differently. It's not like, all right, so they just announced Kage for Street Fighter V, again, to bring it back to Street Fighter V, which is Evil Ryu. Okay, like, he's got some different moves, but at the end of the day, it's still a version of the Shotokan fighters.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Goku and Vegeta, their whole fighting styles evolved so much over the series, and this game paid so much attention to that level of detail that they fight so differently. Like, most of their base moves and all that stuff, all their special moves are all different. Goku's whole experience is built around, like, being super Saiyan and and evolving off of that. But this was him back when it was Kaioken, and it was kind of like a different animal, you know? So
Kaioken times 10.
Yeah. Oh, God. I love Dragon Ball. But yeah, I didn't understand why people were complaining about that. That was just like...
No, I didn't get that either. I thought it was great. I think they've been really, really intentional with how they are releasing the DLC, who they are releasing. It's a little bit overpriced, I think, for what it is. You know, like, each character is, what, like, $8 or something like that? That's...
Yeah, I haven't bought any of the DLC. That's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
I don't have money to throw away on that.
Just $8, it just feels a little too much. I don't know if $5 is the sweet spot for it, or, like... I feel like for just a character... Like $3, maybe? I don't know.
I know the Smash DLC is gonna be, I guess, what is it? It's $5, I think. Breaks down to like $5 per character or something. But either way, with a character, you're getting a character, a stage, and several pieces of music at least per fighter.
You're getting a bunch of stuff with it.
Yeah, you're not just getting a fighter, which is what the FighterZ stuff is. Like, well, you're just gonna get
Broly.
Broly. Or,
which is great.
Cooler. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Great. You know, they're pulling from all of the lore. They're making it all work. Like, I really, really like it. It's a bit expensive. But man, is that game fun to watch.
It really is. Tao Pai Pai should be a DLC character. Mm. Love to play as General Tao in that game. That would be amazing.
Where is Mr. Satan?
Where he belongs.
How... Very dare you, sir.
All right, my next individual award is Best Use of Explosives and Chickens.
Mm.
Bomb Chicken.
Bomb Chicken. Man, you did not bury the lead on that one.
I did not. Because I loved this game. You remember me talking about it for weeks on this show. I loved this game. It's so freaking good. It's so clever. It's so... brilliantly designed. It's so wonderful looking. It sounds great. It looks great. It's super genius premise. I was absolutely in love with this game. It just didn't crack the top three for me because, the ones that did make my top three, I think are just incredible games. And this was incredible too, which is why I needed to come up with an award to give it. So, best use of explosives and chickens goes to Bomb Chicken, because it's just brilliant. Because this game is amazing, and you should buy it.
Because it's Bomb Chicken.
It's Bomb Chicken. It's right what it is, right on the tin.
Just
it's
got a just great the name sense alone. Of humor.
Exploding chickens, bombs everywhere. God, I want to replay this game. Just talking about it now, I just want to go grab the Switch and play Bomb Chicken again. But then I'd turn on the Switch and I'd scroll past all the other games I'm playing right now and be like, "Well, crap,
right?"
Jesus. I don't even have anything else to say about it. You want to hear me talk about Bomb Chicken? Go back several months and listen to those old episodes, because I wouldn't shut up about this game.
You really?
Because it's so freaking good. It's so good.
I'm so Bomb tired Chicken's of hearing amazing. About it.
All right. What's next?
My next award is best use of the style of voice acting in video games that didn't make me want to rip my own ears off, and that would be Owl Boy.
Oh.
Mostly because I really enjoyed this game this year. And really liked playing through it, and it was really charming. But it did have the shit that I really, really don't like in video games. Like, if you're not going to have voice acting, that's fine. I really, really don't like the mumbly nonsense.
You're not a big fan of the gobbledygook.
The gobbledygook. That is the perfect word to describe it. I don't like the gobbledygook even a little bit. You know, and games like Animal Crossing, I find to be quite egregious with their use of the gobbledygook, because it is like they are saying every single word of text that appears on the screen.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in Owlboy, it would be just a quick little like, and the rest of, like, it would be a paragraph of shit.
Yeah.
But with just a little humor.
That's more like, that's the Zelda approach, where it's
I can handle that.
And then a whole sentence or... Oh, and then a whole sentence.
Right. Still don't love it. You know, not my favorite thing, but, you know, it was not enough to detract from the overall charm that Owlboy had. And it was a very, very charming game, and it looked great. It had great music. the ways that you made made your way through the game, using the different characters that you would pick up and fly around, and just a really, really creative game. You know, something that I definitely want to go back to, because I know that there's stuff that I missed in it. And definitely want to go back and like spend some more time with it. But, you know, 19 other things came out the very next week.
Yeah.
So
that is how it's been going this year. The Owl Boy is also on my list of things that I wish I had played this year. Because I know you were talking about it
really
a lot.
I think
just
you
didn't
would
get
love
around
it.
To it.
That feels like a game that is made for you.
It did. It looked right up my alley. I think that the issue was that it kept coming out. It was out against other things that looked just as good that were less money.
Right.
It was a little bit expensive.
It was like 25 or something like that when it came out.
Yeah, this was just past my threshold for cool indie games at that time. And I've just been on my wish list, and I've just been waiting for it to come up on a sale when I don't have anything else specific to be playing at that time.
Right.
To your point of the voice acting, the worst offender of that, and I don't remember if it actually came out this year, but I know I bought it this year, Yooka-Laylee.
Oh, God.
I actually kind of dig that kind of thing that happens. Yooka-Laylee, there are some characters that did that really, really just, it was literally
I'd shut it right off.
That is a straight impersonation, like, and that would go for every syllable that person was saying in the game, and I'd be like, all right, that's enough, you've that's enough, stop now.
It makes me feel like a baby. It's baby talk. Like, I'm an adult, I'm already playing something cute. You know what I mean? Like, don't throw the baby talk on top of it.
All right. This was, I went with, this for, you know, I'm going to come up with another one that this just reminded me of. So this one right here is best at surprising me and making me smile, went to Runner 3.
Mm.
Because, Runner 3, if you'll remember the way I talked about this game, I wasn't as impressed with this game as I wanted to be at first. And then as I played it more and more, I realized how much I was enjoying it. And once I really sunk my teeth into it, it found constant ways to make me smile and to surprise me, and really wound up being one of the most memorable and fun things I've played this year. I can't say enough good things about this game's music either. Really, really remarkable stuff. Matt Harwood did just an incredible job, really outdid himself. And the music was a big part of it. Obviously, runner music is just a really intrinsic part to the game because it's a rhythm platformer. But much like the game itself, I thought the music was one thing. And then as I continued to listen to it, I realized just how much depth there was to it. And it's really, really good. And also, earlier this year, they did, not that long ago, they did a whole update patch for it that fixed a lot of the problems that stopped people from finding the brilliance in this game, because there was a really high barrier for entry, and they really just straight up fixed this game. So if you haven't played it, or if you bought it at first and didn't like it because it was just too front-loaded with difficulty, please, please, please give this game another shot with the new update, or just give it a shot in the first place, because it really is absolutely one of the best games of the year. It is officially one of my runners up. I didn't list it in my runners up because I wanted to invent an award to give it in this segment anyway. Seriously, Runner 3 is in my top, easily in my top 10. I don't know where I'd put it in top 5 or whatever, but I didn't rank them that closely, but Runner 3 was such an incredible game.
All right. Game that I am surprised did not make it up higher on my list, but that just speaks to the quality of the game releases in 2018, probably would have been my number 5 if we were going in ranked order. Mm-hmm. And that is Guacamelee 2.
And I'm sorry, what was this category again?
game that probably should have been, that I am surprised was not higher on my list, but that speaks to the overall quality of games released in 2018.
Got it. I'll Yeah.
I mean, because if you know me, you
it's a
know,
well-worded award there.
You have know
a hard time
love.
Fitting that on the trophy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know my love for Guacamelee.
I really do.
And I loved Guacamelee too. It was everything that I wanted in a Guacamelee sequel. It is a perfect Metroidvania. I love everything about it. I have zero complaints about this game. It is gorgeous. It plays like a fucking dream. The music is amazing. The boss fights are great. The overall, I mean, to use the Metroidvania term, the castle layout is great. The interaction of the powers is awesome. The self-referential memes that are in it, the self-awareness that it shows to pop culture is phenomenal. There were just a couple other games came out that bumped it down a little bit, but it is a fucking flawless game. It is a flawless game and something that I recommend everybody play.
I will absolutely play this game next year. I already own it. I bought it. I pre-ordered it so I can get a discount. Yeah. I will be playing Guacamelee 1 and 2 thoroughly next year. It is in order. It is on my list.
I love these games so, so much. There was so much cool stuff done in Guacamelee 2, like especially if you have been anywhere, even the slightest bit aware of like indie games and popular indie games over the last couple of years. Like as you are traveling through the different universes, you get to the Limbo verse and like that was just fucking cool. And the River City Ransom reference, and like there's just really, really amazing stuff that just makes you smile in this game. And I just fucking love it. And I want Drinkbox Studios to continue making Guacamelee games forever.
I hope they do. I hope they do that, but I also hope they do other things too.
I mean, I do too. But man, like if every couple of years we get a game this good, you can have my money. Like sweet. I'll give it to you up front, just based on trust.
All right, this one. You know what? This is a similar situation because Choice Provisions has instilled that level of trust in me that I will buy anything that they release. So, biggest surprise of the year, Bubsy by Choice Provisions. I was going to buy it anyway because it's a Bubsy game and I have them all, but I was really shocked by this. I still don't know how to feel about it, but Choice Provisions is making a Bubsy game.
Yeah.
And that was a genuine shock to me and my entire world. That's all.
Yeah, I don't get that at all.
I don't have anything else to say about it. I'd love to know really why.
I mean, maybe they got a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I want to know what Accolade or whatever company owns the Accolade brand is doing right now. Because the last one, they hired the company that did the Gianna Sisters game, mm-hmm. which I heard was pretty solid. And they made an unbelievably mediocre game out of that.
Because it's Bubsy. There's no... He's a mediocre character.
So now they have Choice Provisions doing a Bubsy game.
I mean, yeah.
But it's the thing is they're making it like a runner game. Like, it's an infinite runner. It's not a Bubsy game.
Yeah.
I'm so confused.
I don't know.
Second biggest surprise was Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, because what?
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
This old Activision game is now being made by Team Ninja and being published by Nintendo exclusively for the Switch.
None of that makes any sense.
No, none of that. I mean, you could even take out those things and say there's a Marvel game being published by Nintendo.
Yeah, that's fucking weird.
That is weird. But, alright. Alright, what else you got? We each have one more, right?
Yeah, my number four. My runner-up to the top three. This was the game that wins Best Remake of the Year award. And that is for the completely remade Shadow of the Colossus.
Ah.
They finally
got it right. Third time's a charm.
I mean, really, they finally had the power to make the game that they wanted to make. And what a fucking game it is. My God, did I love this experience. Just so, so much. It is such an emotional experience playing through that game. Team Ico does so much with minimal storytelling cues. I mean, just the action that is on the screen is, I mean, it is a fucking masterclass in game design. It's breathtaking. It's absolutely breathtaking. What they were able to do, what Team Ico, their original vision, and what Blue Point Games was able to finally put together here was simply stunning. Simply stunning. And if you have not played Shadow of the Colossus is my favorite game. You've not played Shadow of the Colossus, or if you haven't played it in a long time because you bought it originally like we all did, and we were like, this is going to be amazing. Fuck, it's not. Please, please play this game. It is magical. I love it. It's so sad. It's so sad, but so perfect at the same time. It is, oh, man, I love that game so much.
Yeah, I mean, well, clearly, but I would love to have played this one.
You know what Shadow of the Colossus is? Do you like all of us have a song that we put on? Either when we're feeling sad or when we're like, I want to feel sad right now. So you put a song on, that's what Shadow of the Colossus is. It just hits that, it's a deep emotional hit that you get from that game that is unlike any other game that I've ever played. Yeah. It's Tiff suggested that it is the video game version of All by Myself. That's not the song that I put on when I want to feel sad. When I want to feel sad, I put on Tiny Tim's Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
I put on All by Myself by Green Day.
This doesn't sound like the other version.
This is very different. Going for a really different feel. Well, God. I find that amusing that you gave that your last category was best remake of the year, because my is also best remake of the year.
Look at that. We're so good at this, Chris.
We are. My best remake of the year goes to Katamari Damacy.
Mm-hmm.
Because much like you were saying that Shadow of the Colossus, now these games could not be more different.
No, I feel like they're almost the same game.
Pretty much the same feeling.
Shadow of the Colossus and Katamari are basically the same thing.
They really strike the same emotional chord.
They really do hit you deep in the cockles of your heart.
But you're actually not entirely wrong, just in very different ways, because Katamari means that game is wonderful. That game is lightning in a bottle. That game is Pac-Man. That game is gaming perfection.
It is.
It's just, here is this simple, stupid concept. Go nuts. And they didn't reinvent the wheel. It just looks prettier. It's in high definition. It's in widescreen. It runs nice and smooth, but it still has that not low fidelity, but that low poly count that the original PS2 Katamari had.
Right.
Because there's no need to not, right? It's a very, very specific stylistic approach to the way this world looks. It's very odd and angular, and this game is at the same time the most absurd thing you've ever seen, and will, while you're doing something that ridiculous, smack you across the face with some unfathomably beautiful music.
Yeah.
The game is remarkable, and I can't say enough good things about it. And it feels weird talking about this game with any sort of, you know, deep level, because it is Katamari. It is goofy. It's the king of all cosmos and his big dumb hat and his giant flowing cape and his verbal abuse of his tiny son. There's, because this game is so ridiculously silly, but at the same time, it's, I mean, the I can't remember the full name of the song, the Cherry Blossom chorus or whatever it is, or even Lonely Rolling Star to an extent. I mean, there's
just these, spectacular.
Yeah, there's the map screen music, like the between levels is this beautiful little acoustic guitar piece that, you know, for just the minute or two that you'll be on that screen to listen to it, it's just this cute little loop that keeps playing. But if for some reason you just leave it there, which you have no reason to do other than to listen to the music, it turns into this, it goes into this weird, like, marching band circus type thing, and then more strings so get odd. Involved. It's intensely bizarre, but unbelievably beautiful. And that's really what this game boils down to, is that it's brilliant and beautiful in its simplicity. And my wife has been losing sleep over it, which is one of those wonderful things where, like, I haven't had as much time to play Smash at night before I go to bed, because every night before bed, Karen is playing Katamari, and that warms my heart to no end, because she's not much of a gamer, and there have been multiple games on the Switch that she cannot wait to play. Like, she spent a ton of time in Runner 3, especially since the update. She spent a ton of time with Katamari. The two of us played through all of Overcooked, and we're halfway done with Overcooked 2. She's played all the way through both Picross games. I haven't even done that yet.
That's saying something.
That really is saying something. It is very emblematic of... I haven't seen her attack a game with this level of fervor in... I don't think ever. Like, even the PS2 version, like, she's played this game before. She was really excited for this to come out, because she hasn't really sat down and played it properly for a very long time. We've always had it here, like in the basement, readily available for, you know, just to play the PS2 version. But
sure,
even that, like, by comparison, now we have the HD one on the Switch that loads up in a couple of seconds, and like, hooray, we're now playing Katamari.
Yeah, this is what we're doing.
Exactly. And it's amazing. It is amazing. It's $30. Considering the original version was $20 and inflation, you're really not spending much more than you were back when this originally came out. Worth that money. This game is absolutely worth the price of admission. If you own a Switch, or I believe you can get it on Steam as well. Really surprised this isn't every platform under the sun, but whatever.
Maybe
if you
own
a Switch, you absolutely need to buy this game. Just get Katamari. You have to.
All right. That is an excellent place to take a break, Chris.
It is, yes. We're going to take ourselves a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about our top three games of the year. You are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. Okay, we're back. It's time for Dan and I to give our top games of the year, our top three per person. Dan, real quick, I know you mentioned Shadow of the Colossus. Do you have any specific runners-up, anything that you wanted to hit right before your top three?
No, Shadow of the Colossus would have been the runner-up. I mean, I want to put Rise of the Tomb Raider on there somewhere, but if we're being honest, I just have not played enough of it know where to put it.
Okay, cool. That is almost exactly where I am with one of my runners up is Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom. It very well could have been top three.
Yeah.
Knowing my top three, I doubt it, but Monster Boy is that freaking good. But I'm just not far enough into it. It came out very late in the year. I bought it. I loved every second that I've played of it. I haven't gone back to it yet because I've been splitting my time mostly with Smash Brothers. I got really sucked into World of Light and a little bit of Katamari as well. But Monster Boy is the next thing on my list to hit because I the game's so freaking good.
Just too much, man. There's just too much.
My other runner-up, again, I don't know specifically where I would place it, but it was just behind my my top three was Dandara. It's another really, 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 really good game that I really think you should play in particular because I think you'll really... I know how much you like Metroidvanias, just like I do, and this game's unconventional control scheme really, really shook things up. This game was bloody brilliant, and it came out very close to Celeste, and I think that it got swept under the rug a lot. This game didn't get nearly the respect it deserved. it should be involved in more Game of the Year conversations, I think, because it was extremely well put together. Very, very difficult and unforgiving in a lot of ways. It could be frustrating, but I believe there was a big update that fixed several things, including the way the map worked. The game defied gravity. It was a whole Metroidvania that you can't walk.
Which is crazy.
It is. You know, it reminds me a lot of what we were talking about last week with Bionic Commando. We're like, we're going to make a platform where you can't jump. You just got to use this grappling hook, and that's where you're going to traverse, and it's going to work. That's how that was exactly the kind of thing that Dandara reminds me of. It's like, there's just a very different way of getting around, and you know, it's not just jumping like in VVVVVV where you're switching gravity or whatever. It's just you point an arrow and she will zoom straight to that thing, like super fast, like straight across that arrow. It's such a good game. Really, really, really highest marks for me. Wonderful game. Dandara, please look into it. Anybody who hasn't tried this yet, really, really put some time into it. It's astonishing.
All right,
let's get to it. Dan, what is your number three game of the year?
Hollow Knight Voidheart Edition.
Okay, I don't know why I'm surprised. I shouldn't be.
I mean, it is just such a goddamn good game. Like I said earlier, I am 27 hours into the game. A lot of that is because, I don't know, maybe not a lot of it, but there's a decent amount of it where it's like, you know, I have to go be like a father and husband and like a functioning adult human. So, like, I walk away and leave it down, but, you know, there is a decent chunk of that that is just actual gameplay, and I am nowhere near finished with the game. I have not even fully powered up everything yet. There's so much to do and so much to get, especially in this version, because this version came with the 4 expansion packs that the PC added, you know, as time went on. So this is just this massive, massive game that's in here, and God, it's just a gorgeous game. The sound design in this game is outstanding. There's a particular part that you get to called the Deep Nest, and when you get down into the Deep Nest, there's a lot of squelching, and it's very wet, and it sounds very wet as you're walking around. And there's a lot of like really creepy bugs and enemies that are in there, and some spider things that pop up that are just really fucking nuts. Like there's so much crazy stuff in this game. I absolutely love it. It does such a wonderful job of telling this just really deep and moving story. And it's so cleverly designed. There are a couple things that knock it down from it being, like, in my mind, the best Metroidvania ever. And that's certain things like when you first start out the game, if you hit an enemy, you get knocked back a little bit, right? So you learn how to play with that. And then as you were playing through the game, you can unlock these different charms that you can add to your character. And one of the charms that you can add eliminates the knockback as you're hitting enemies. And it's like, well, I mean, I get that that's a design choice, and like, it's not really a major gripe, but I don't know. Something about that just kind of struck me as like, well, that feels a little cheap. You know, that, and maybe not cheap's not the right word. Like, you weren't necessarily sure what you were going for here. So you were like, you had a split decision on the team of like, when you hit an enemy, should it knock you back or should it not? And like, half of you were like, it should knock you back. And the other half were like, no, totally not. And you're like, I know, we'll just give the player the option. And I just like a little bit of indecisiveness on there. There's another charm that you can add where if you pull up the map screen, if you don't have the charm up, it just pulls up the map. But if you do have the charm equipped, it shows you where you are on the map. And that, again, just feels a little like, it just show me where the fuck I am on the map. Like, why is this a thing that I have to take up a slot? You know, like, that just feels kind of cheap and makes me spend, you know, grind a little bit more to expand the amount of charms, because it is a Metroidvania. You get stronger as you go along, so you can add more slots to add more charms so that you can have like those two things equipped and then have the actual meaningful stuff on there, which does present some amount of challenge of like balancing what you need before you go into certain encounters and all of that. It just, that sort of stuff feels like it didn't need to be in there and is just more of a distraction from an otherwise brilliant game. Those are such minor quibbles for something that is just so incredibly brilliant. And I am so happy that I purchased that game and cannot wait to play more of it.
Excellent. It is very much on my list of things to do this year, or next year.
I will be so interested to see where you kind of rank the Guacamelees and Hollow Knight and Dead Cells, like, once you eventually get to those.
Me too.
And fuck, we haven't even talked about Chasm. I really want to play Chasm too. Anyway, number That's three, Hollow word. Knight. What, right. Chasm?
Chasm, it's a fun word.
Do you not know it? It's a procedurally generated Metroidvania kind of thing. It looks really fucking dope.
I feel like I've heard of it. I haven't heard a lot about it yet.
Yeah, it looks great.
All right, my number three goes to The Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, where do I even begin with this game? All right, so I don't remember how deep I went into this, and for anybody who hasn't played this right now, I'm going to go through a little bit of spoilery stuff. So stop listening for a little bit.
Does that mean me too? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I don't think you particularly care about the spoilery stuff.
At this point, I know enough of what I think you're going to spoil that I'm not super concerned.
So this game starts off and was billed immediately with its original trailer. It's like, wow, somebody made a new Ninja Gaiden game, and that looks really fantastic. And at the end of the trailer, everything goes 16-bit. I'm like, what?
Huh?
What does that mean? And then they were like, yeah, no, that means something. So enjoy the game. Like, oh, okay. So I just feverishly waited for this game to come out. And then it came out, and the first surprise it hit me with was how freaking funny it is. Because Ninja Gaiden's not funny.
No.
There's zero comedy in Ninja Gaiden. And this looks just like Ninja Gaiden. It does not play just like Ninja Gaiden. It's played very inspired by it, but on a very, very core level, the movement in this game is just flat out different from Ninja Gaiden. So that's something straight off the bat that if you've never played this, you really need to get in your head. But that was my first surprise, is holy crap, this game is funny. Like, really freaking funny. And then you get to the 16-bit part. And so the first chunk of this game is just all about this cabinet. Like, well, not all about. It's like you're this messenger, and you got to deliver this thing, and you find this shop, this weird, like, weird shop with this really funny shopkeeper guy. And there's this cabinet you just can't get into. And then you get through the first chunk of the game. Akin it to Link to the Past. You get the three pendants and you fight Aghanim.
Right.
And they're like, all right, go open up the cabinet. You open up the cabinet, a bunch of robes in there. And like, yeah, I was a messenger, and these other guys were messengers too. And every single time we do this thing, we fail. And now it's your turn. Now you get to be the new shopkeeper. And you put on a robe and you pretend to be the shopkeeper for like 5 minutes. And like, another dude who's from the future comes in through your door, and like, you just get to see it from the shopkeeper's perspective. And this dude comes in and he walks back and forth and he jumps around just like you do, because when you walk into this place, the floor appears under you. So over every time I went in there, I'd go in and I'd just start jumping around to watch the floor appear under my feet. And this game knows you did that and does that to you.
That's
and then
awesome.
Then your guy doesn't come back. And you're just, and then one of the previous shopkeeper comes back in and is just like, so yeah, how's it going? How's this shopkeeper going? Shopkeeper business going? He's like, I don't know. I haven't seen my guy in a while. I was like, wait a minute. You haven't seen him in a while? That's not good. That means that he died. That's not cool. That means that now who's going to be the messenger? He's not supposed to die. He's supposed to eventually get to be one of us. Completely screws up their whole thing. And then you get out of the robe, get back in your ninja outfit, and the game turns into a Metroidvania. The game goes from a level-based, you know, you're going through, you beat this stage, and now you've beaten that stage. And then you get a little screen, go to the next stage. And as you're playing, you keep spotting these things like, if I had some sort of power, I'd love to be able to go back and get that, but I guess I can't because I beat this stage. I must have just missed something. But then, no, you didn't just miss something. The whole world opens up. So not only can you go back to all those other levels, but there's a crap ton of new levels on top of that.
That's so cool.
And the whole time, the time skip mechanic is the 8-bit to 16-bit thing. So when you're in the past, you're in 8-bit. But when you flash forward to the future, you're in 16-bit, which is bananas. It's just such a cool concept to the point that the entire soundtrack was also redone in 16-bit as opposed to 8-bit. You know, the 16-bit is based off of Genesis sounds and the 8-bit is based off of NES sounds. Again, this is completely spoiling all these wonderful surprises in this game. But there's still so much more, because just as soon as you think you have this game figured out, or you think you're gonna know what's gonna happen next, you're fighting a giant frog who is a legendary butler while riding a dragon whose life goal was to be a butler.
That's amazing.
Just nonstop amazing, culminating in the last stage, where again, in the last stage of the game, it still managed to subvert all of my expectations, because for the Metroidvania part, you're trying to collect these music notes.
Right.
And these music notes are just kind of goofy. And it's one of those things that while this game is very funny, it is undeniably cool at all times. It is a very slick and cool thing. And then you get these really kind of goofy, brightly colored music notes, because everything, the whole thing leading up to the last boss, and again, I won't spoil it because I couldn't possibly spoil all the stuff there is in this game because it's so freaking dense. But the whole point is to get this music box opened by collecting all of this stuff. And you get to play out the last stage inside this music box, which my initial thought was, this is stupid, because music boxes, like, this is just stupid. And seconds into walking around inside of this music box, first off, the music starts and it's like, okay, it's all twinkly dinkly music box noise. This is, you know, this is cute. This is kind of a letdown. But within seconds, the way the song starts for this last part of the game is it's all just that little twinkly dinkly stuff, and then the drums start. And as soon as the drums start in the music, the entire stage starts moving along to the rhythm of the song. I'm talking entire walls moving, chunking back and forth, because you're inside of this giant, essentially functional living maze that's also a music box. So platforms appear and disappear, and walls move across the screen, spikes show up and disappear. Every single thing in the level is moving to the rhythm of this incredible song that second after second keeps adding layer after layer after layer till it gets to this just mind-bogglingly good chunk of music that's just, I can't believe how freaking good this is, especially considering when I started this, I couldn't believe how stupid it was. The messenger.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. This game gets my number three spot, and I love it this much, but it gets my number three spot because I love the other two games even more for constantly subverting my expectations in ways I could never possibly have dreamed of. This game is a goddamn masterpiece, and I can't wait for the DLC. I cannot recommend it enough. Holy crap on a pita. The messenger is amazing.
I'm still waiting for it to come out on PS4. Mostly because I don't have a pro controller.
And I'm sure... Am I sure it is?
It was announced that it was coming in 2018. And as we sit here recording this episode on the 18th of December, there are a scant few weeks left for it to, like,
yeah, it says
surprise,
coming out this year, but...
And then
yeah, no,
nothing.
It's not there.
And there is no further information about that game. So either it'll be on PS4, or I will get a pro controller at some point. Because
I
should
get a
pro
controller
to play
at some
this
point.
Game.
You really I do have to play this game. This is high recommendation. You need to play this game. And I'm sorry I just spoiled a bunch of stuff, but you spoiled God of War for me, and it's not going to affect me playing and enjoying that game someday, so live the dream.
No, and the Switch, like, I think a lot of people forget that in the original marketing for the Messenger, it says that it switches to a Metroidvania-style game.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, like, it says, like, it goes from an 8-bit Ninja Gaiden game to a Metroidvania-style game.
And there is jokes that very specifically call out Metroid and Ninja Gaiden, like, very
which
specifically.
Is great.
And I mean, like, talking about a guy named, like, Frank Gaiden or something like that is so funny. And for all the awesome things I just said, I really can't stress enough how freaking hilarious the script in this game is.
That's great.
Shopkeeper, that's great. Character of the year. The shopkeeper from The Messenger is my favorite character of the year, hands down.
All right. Well, all right, Chris.
What's your number two? What you got?
My number two, and I if we're being honest, my number one and my number two were so very close until this past weekend. And I will explain more about that when I get to my number one. But my number two game this year is Insomniac's Spider-Man game.
Okay. I was really curious where you were going to land on all this.
Such a fantastic game. From start to finish, this game is absolutely brilliant. I have never felt so much like Spider-Man while playing a game. The segment, the things that they did to break up, because, like, as much fun as it is to be Spider-Man, it's like, you know, after a bunch of hours, it's like, all right, I'm still just swinging through the city. But the little bits that they put in where you get to control Miles Morales, where you get to control Mary Jane, it broke up the gameplay and made it really interesting and clever in the way that those characters moved throughout the world. The storyline is just fantastic. Of using, like, Mr. Negative has never been as cool as Mr. Negative is in this game. The emotional journey that you go on with Doc Ock in this game is among the best that story has ever been represented. And I'm including the Spider-Man 2 movie in that. Like, it is as good, if not better. The graphics are simply stunning. The kind of self-awareness of, like, people wanting to take pictures of their games and using the share feature that's built in to where, like, Spider-Man has a selfie mode. You know, so, like, as you're taking photos, you can, like, web bad guys up in interesting ways and then take a selfie with them. And put, like, fun filters on top of it and all of that. Like, all of that stuff is great, and it is all window dressing to the core mechanic that this game just absolutely nails. It is so fucking fun to play. It is just fun. You know, like, swinging around, doing all the tricks in the air, like, doing, you get, like, as you go throughout the game, you expand all the gadgets that you can have, and, like, some of the impact webbing and different moves that you can do, you're like, oh, there's a bunch of guys, like, robbing a bank over there. I'm going to swing in and do, like, all this weird, wacky shit and, like, web them all to stop. It's, oh, my God, it's just so much fun. Just an absolutely brilliant, brilliant game that is so much better than, you know, when they first showed trailers of it, it was like, oh, they made, like, Arkham Asylum, but, like, with Spider-Man. And while it is that, to a point, it is so much more and so much better. And everything you have ever wanted in a Spider-Man game, that's what this is.
I am not surprised. And I can't say I'm not surprised to hear any of the praise that you've given it, because you've been talking about this game since even before it came out. And I've read some just awesome things on it. And I wish that I had, I really wish that I had the time to play through this. I wish I did. I had the time. I wish I had the time to play through this, because my time sitting in front of a television to play a video game, like for more than 15 minutes at a time, is just so non-existent these days, which is why I'm not through Horizon yet.
Right.
Though I could go on. I know last year, everybody on the show was essentially calling me crazy for thinking that, you know, like, oh, you love Zelda now, but if you play Horizon, you're going to like it better. I can unequivocally say that that is patently false.
Right.
False. I like Zelda a lot better than Horizon for a number of reasons. A lot of it comes down to the kinds of games that I like. Not to say that Horizon isn't brilliant, but really, something like Spider-Man and as well as God of War were two games, especially God of War, because I have such a connection to that, those games. I freaking loved the original God of War, like, mm-hmm. a lot. But man, I really wish I had time to play this game. I really, really do.
You must find time to play this.
I must. It is on my list. Of things to try to find time to do. And, you know, who knows, as the kids get older and as my schedule changes and life changes, as things settle down post holidays, I had this idea of setting aside, you know, a half hour to 45 minutes every morning to play games like Horizon and whatnot, you know, before the kids wake up. And I'll see if I can get back into that swing of things, and maybe see if I can finish Horizon and then move on to the other games like Spider-Man and God of War and Uncharted, right. and whatnot that I want to play, Shadow of the Colossus, but we shall see. But a very solid game number two choice. Well done. My number two is possibly a game some people assumed would be my number one, but it is not. My number two is Super Smash Brothers Ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't friggin' put it down. If for no other reason than I can't stop freaking playing this game. It's very similar to, it's not as impactful as Zelda was when I was just living in Hyrule, mm-hmm. but it's that same kind of itch. It's just, I wake up in the morning and I grab the Switch and then I go to the bathroom and then I grab the Switch and I get a quick match in, like, you know, well, I've got a minute before I can cook breakfast, so I'm going to, you know, grab another spirit or something.
Right.
It's got that just one more match thing to it. It does that so well. Like, I just got to see what's around this one more corner. I can't play it before I go to bed. I have cut myself off from playing it before bedtime because I won't stop playing it. I'll be up all freaking night.
Right.
Especially if I get to a spirit I can't beat. Because that's the thing that's... For all the things that are bothering me about this game, which there are plenty, there's lots of weird design choices that I'm like, yeah, but why wouldn't you do this? Why wouldn't you also include this if you've gone this far? But really, at the end of the day, the incredible attention to detail, this World of Light mode is just a constant pleasure, even when it's a pain in the ass. Like, coming up to, I just explained last week the Otacon battle, right?
Right,
where it's freaking Dr. Mario and Metal Rob the robot.
That's so great.
I keep running into these bouts that are like, I was working on one earlier today that was what the hell was it? It was just two characters from WarioWare, and it was like a 8-volt and 9-volt, I think their names are, and like, mm-hmm. 9-volt is the little dude with the yellow hat on, and he plays like all the 8-bit games, and his bigger brother, 8-volt or 9-volt, or I don't remember their names, but there's a bigger version of him, and he's this big green dude with glasses, and like, you get into the match, and it's Incineroar, but a green, and the villager from Animal Crossing, but dressed up like the 9-volt character, like his colors match, and then all the items that show up in the level are like the Galaga things, because it's all based on retro video games, and it's like, it does all these ridiculous clever things, and as soon as you get him, you're like, ha, I get it, that's hilarious.
That's cute.
that's adorable, that's ridiculous. And it's constant that, and there's so much to it, and the attention to detail, just the I keep saying attention to detail, but there's such a ridiculous level of of lore and just looking at every single piece of this and how much goes into the backgrounds and how much amazing music. And I can't wait to spend more time with the Belmonts because I haven't unlocked them in World of Light yet. So the characters you can play as in the story mode, or it's not really much of a story. It's just this giant board of event matches, basically. You have to unlock the characters differently there. You have to find them on the map. And this is really cool because if you want to unlock characters the way I did relatively quickly just to play against your friends, you can do that. You can blow through that and get through that fairly easily, at least mm-hmm. as I found. Fairly easily. Not easily, but not a crazy slog. The World of Light, though, it forces you to play with characters you're probably not all that good with. It forces you to play through sections of the game with characters that you might not even try otherwise, which is fun for me. I mean, I've reaffirmed that I suck with Lucas, so I won't be playing with him again, but I gave him a good solid try because I unlocked him, and my only other characters were like Donkey Kong and Mario. So, depending on what route you go, you're always going to unlock something different from somebody else that you know who's playing the game. So, I have a couple of other friends who are playing Smash Ultimate, and they're going a very different route from me. And I think that's really neat. The map is super clever, and I just unlocked Mega Man earlier today, but really my MVP for most of this has been Wii Fit Trainer.
Really?
Wii Fit Trainer is an underrated character in Smash. She's got a great set of moves, and she's one of those weirdo characters that a lot of the hardcore Smash players hate just because it's a stupid character. But as somebody who has a real attachment to Wii Fit, I love playing as her, and right. She's also really good. So she's been my MVP for a lot of this stuff. And once I really learned the spirit system, and I can't put it down, it's so goddamn good. I want to go back to Monster Boy, but then I pick up the Switch and it's like, well, I'm already in Smash Brothers, and it'll only take a couple of minutes
here.
Yeah, it'll only take a couple of more minutes to load up the Smash board and see what spirits are there. And like, oh, Dive Man's there, so I'm going to grab Dive Man.
While I'm doing that.
Yeah, I can't not get the spirit for Dive Man, even though it's completely useless. The friggin' main character from Fling Smash for the Wii was on there. I unlocked Harmonite the other day, and I was like, this, I know it's just a picture of him, but I don't care. It's really cool to see that acknowledged. I loved Harmonite. The game's great.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. And I'm actually kind of looking forward to jumping into it when Santa Claus hopefully brings it for the kids.
It is a genuine joy. I think that you'll definitely get something out of it. I know you skipped Smash 4, right? You've never really got into them. I remember briefly at my house you played the Mega Man level and were like, "Well, that's fucking cool."
Yeah.
But
and I that think, was about it.
Yeah. I think you'll get a kick out of this, at least, for a little while, or at the very least, just watching your kids play it, because just the Castlevania stage is so good. It's so good.
And yeah, like, that's the stuff that I'm definitely excited for,
Playing as Ridley is so much fun. I never knew how much I wanted to play as Ridley before, but holy crap. His moveset is ridiculous. His forward special, he just grabs you and rails you across the ground. It's wonderful.
Makes sense. I mean, he's kind of a dick.
He's a complete dick. King K. Rool is great, too. K. Rool is just wonderful. He's just this big, fat, jolly, evil crocodile. I love him.
That's awesome.
I love this game so freaking much. It's just pure, wonderful, joyous content, and I have the gripes I have against it are so minuscule compared to the fact that I just can't stop playing it, and it is definitely the best version of Smash Brothers as far as I can tell.
All right, well, we're down
game of the year
to
time.
Coveted number one game of the year.
Puzzle and Dragons.
Absolutely.
Portal 2.
Oh, we forgot to give the annual Tiffany Ryan Portal 2 for Game Design Award for Portal 2. So that's a thing.
Congratulations, Portal 2.
Congratulations, Portal 2.
Makes tight race.
Portal 3 already. Jesus
Seriously.
Christ. Bridge Constructor Portal came out this year, Chris. We didn't even talk about that.
It's a great game.
It's a great game. So, last year when we did this show, I was like, look, I already know that next year my game of the year is going to be God of War. And it is. It is. Indeed, it is.
Spoiler alert.
And it was neck and neck with Spider-Man up until this weekend. And the reason that I say up until this weekend is because back in September, one of the free games on PS Plus was God of War 3 Remastered. Okay, so that's the PS4 version, upscale graphics, all that stuff. Looks great, all of that. This weekend, we were kind of bored, just sitting around, and I was like, I want to jump into Tomb Raider, but I don't have enough time to get into Tomb Raider, because like that is a game that I play in very, very large chunks. And I was like, let me just check out what this this remastered God of War looks like on the PS4, right? Because it's God of War 3, it's got that opening battle with all the Titans that are crawling up Mount Olympus, you know, you start off, you're on Gaia, all that's cool. So it's like, all right, I'll get into that. So I played the game for a little bit, and like, you know, was playing around with it, and I was like, man, this game fucking sucks compared to the PS4 God of War. And I adore the God of War games, but comparing them to what Sony Santa Monica did with the release of God of War this year, it is so night and day different. It is such a completely different game, and it is such a bigger and better experience in this new version of God of War that it really solidified, like, no, this God of War was definitely my game of the year. It is simply a masterpiece of a video game. I have really never played anything that controls quite like it. I mean, because there's bits of it where it feels sort of like Resident Evil 4 and like that switch to the over the shoulder and like the concerns of how is this going to work? Because that's not Kratos, you know, like, and he's got this axe thing and like, what is all this going to, but then you get into it and it just becomes this really engrossing, wonderful experience. And the fact that the little kid is with you the entire game, and it never gets to the point where you feel like you were escorting him around and having to protect him, it is just, it's so wonderfully done. The story that is told is so just unbelievably well written. The twists and turns that are in this game, when you finally, you know, spoiler alert, I don't know if we need to put up the sirens again all these months later, but spoiler alert, when Athena shows up and you are rowing your boat down the river and she's talking to you, and you go back into your cabin and you pull out the Blades of Chaos and restrap, and like, you feel for Kratos in that moment of like, just the heartache he is going through of having to restrap those things to his wrist and get back out there with the Blades of Chaos was just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I love everything about this game. Everything about this game. It...
Man. I'll tell you something I don't like about this game.
What don't you like about this game?
It's just called God of War. That game already exists. Stop.
Well,
that.
I mean, yeah. Maybe. Maybe I don't disagree with that, but
it's not as bad as, like, you know, when they called, you know, like Rocky Balboa or that movie Rambo, like,
yeah,
okay, but we all think First Blood is called Rambo,
but it's
don't call like the fifth one Rambo. That's just a dick move. Like,
yeah, it is kind of a dick move, but like, I mean, it
now, if you're resetting continuity, that's one thing, but this is the same Kratos from God of War,
and the God of War, the way that they tied those things together. Man, and like the fact that you go through this first game and it's so deeply steeped in Norse mythology, but like really, really well done and clever uses of that mythology to fit the story that they're trying to tell. I mean, fuck, that first time that Jormungandr, the world serpent, pops up, it's holy shit. I mean, it's this amazing thing. Especially now, like I'm listening with my daughter when Katie and I drive around, we're listening to Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology book.
Oh, wow.
So, like, getting to listen to that and, like, reflecting back on this game is kind of cool, but just there's so much stuff in this game. God damn it. Like, it is by far the best game that I played this year. It really, really is.
I
mean, we've talked about it a lot. There's not a ton left to say.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I am shocked that there has not been additional DLC released for it, even though they said they weren't going to. They were like, we made the game. You have it. Don't.
That's,
you know,
how I feel about Mario Odyssey. Like, but like, how have you not done that yet?
But they keep saying, like, but companies say that shit all the time of, like, you know, we made the game. There's nothing additional, you know, and then, like, lo and behold, 6 months later. But no, they were like, we made God of War. It's done. We told that story. You know, we'll make another one. Like, again, because spoilers, you know, we talked about this originally too, but, like, the revelation at the end of that game of who your son actually is, and then the post-credit sequence of Thor showing up, like, you get through this entire game, and no Odin, no Thor, like, all you meet is Baldur. Like, that's it. In all of Norse mythology, like, you meet Baldur and Freya. There's so much more to do, Chris.
And I'm sure they will do it.
Or, well, I guess you meet Thor's kids, too. You fucking kill them.
I really liked what you said about Resident Evil 4, and I think that's part of what really excited me about this one, because as much as I did love the original God of War, I did get a little bit bored in God of War 2, which is why I never played... one of the reasons I never really played the rest of them. But this one is to the original God of War what Resident Evil 4 was to the original Resident Evil. And it was just a complete overhaul and just made it into something new and something ultimately better. It just, it really evolved. It really elevated what this game series is. I wish that I had played it. And I would have been very curious to see where it would have landed on my list, because I know that you can take a look at the games that I played and the games that I've given all these awards to and the things that have meant a lot to me this year and say, well, yeah, but you didn't play these big blockbusters. But
sure,
to me, games are games, blockbusters are no. And if something affects me in a way, like, I don't know that... Just given my sensibilities, I don't know that something like God of War, Spider-Man would have knocked off The Messenger from my list. Because The Messenger, I mean, you heard me talk about it. I incredibly enthusiastically, that game blew me away.
Yeah.
But I would have been interested to see where this one fit with me, just because I love when that kind of stuff happens. I love it when they take an idea that seemed, at least at the time, you know, God of War was groundbreaking. Time the first Resident Evil was groundbreaking. At the time, Metal Gear on NES was groundbreaking. But then Metal Gear Solid happened, Resident Evil 4 happened, and now God of War happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is where you've taken something that is already legendary, and now you've just reinvented the wheel. You've improved on it in so many ways. Breath of the Wild, same situation.
Yeah,
it's the same situation. It redefined what Zelda is, and this redefines what God of War is, and is. Even having not played it, just listening to you talk about it, there's no doubt in my mind that it is 100% worthy of all of the praise everybody has given.
It really, really is. And I can guarantee, without having played it, that anybody who has said that Red Dead Redemption 2 is a better game is flat out fucking wrong. Just guaranteed across the board. Because, like, really, like, it took so much of what was great about God of War. But it was like, and I don't say this like in a nasty or mean way, but like when you play the 2018 God of War and then go back and look at the other ones, the original trilogy was like your angry teenage years. And this one was made by adults.
I mean,
it's
assuming
still violent,
there isn't...
it's still over the top. But
I'm assuming there isn't like a scene where Kratos is like banging three chicks or something at the same time.
Nope, all of that stuff is gone. This is a mature, serious version of this character and this style of game, and it is so much better for it.
And when you say mature, you don't mean like rated M for mature. You mean like actually, because the character is now a, you know, when he was a father before, but now he's a father with a living child.
Right. It yeah. I mean, there's just the difference is striking, especially going back and now playing the older one. Like, I found myself so limited in what I could do in the original trilogy.
That's, you know, like, really interesting to hear you say, because that's one of the things that has made it's not true with Wind Waker, because Wind Waker is on a wholly different level to me. But other 3D Zelda games, and in particular Horizon, I find incredibly limiting after having played Breath of the Wild. That's just freedom. And it's one of those things that is so impressive to me, because of when you go back to play older games, you're just like, wow, all right, we really have come a long way. Like, when it changes the game that much.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah. Next time I actually see you in person, I will bring the game and you can just, you know, whenever you get to it.
I will make a point of it.
All right.
I truly will.
So, well, your number one is obviously Puzzle and Dragons. You finally downloaded the game, Chris. I'm so happy. So
I've
happy.
I've been secretly playing it every day all year.
And I was right all along.
My number one is a bit of a surprise to me that it stayed my number one all year.
Right.
Celeste came out in January.
And you said, like, in January, it's going to take a really, really monstrously phenomenal game to knock this off of the top of my list.
And knowing me, that Smash Brothers couldn't even do it.
Yeah.
That's how special this game is.
That's crazy to me.
That's how much this game completely... This game wrecked me. It just completely destroyed me.
In all the best ways.
Exactly, in all the best ways. And I haven't even seen all of it. And I probably never will, because I don't want to approach this game with getting the B-sides and the C-sides, because I've done enough of... This game's freaking hard. Game is all... It is a tough-as-nails platformer. At its core, but everything else around it is so just profoundly moving. The whole idea of this game being about climbing a mountain and about getting over yourself and confronting your own demons and dealing with depression and dealing with anxiety, and it does it with this cutesy little, you know, 16-bit looking character and some dialogue trees. Like, there's no voice acting or anything in this game. It's the game itself as storytelling. And I've thought back to this game so many times this year, and I wish I had the time and the energy to go back and play it again, because I really want to experience it again. But when I think about some of the best times I had this year, you know, in and out of gaming, just the best times I had this year, thinking back to that time where I played through a panic attack, and just how I was affected afterwards, just like, wow, I just did that. This game really just did that, and that was nuts. And the feeling of getting to the top of that mountain, that whole final segment where it's just like, all right, just go a little bit further, because the game's got this very interesting visual style that's very 16-bit, but very oddly detailed at the same time. Like, I'm not explaining it well, but I know that it's kind of dark through a lot of it until you're getting to the top of the mountain and the winds are picking up and there's snow everywhere and there's flags, like, because people have made it to the top of this mountain before. And the top of the mountain itself isn't all that visually impressive. The view is amazing.
Right.
But, like, you get to the top of the mountain and you're just like, yep, it's the same textures that I've been climbing this whole time.
Message.
None of that matters at all, because you're like, I did it. I did it. I made it to the top of this friggin' mountain. I beat this thing. This game did not beat me. This mountain didn't beat me. this game making me doubt myself did not beat me. Like, the entire time playing through, climbing this thing, and the really the only thing, the only complaint I have about this game, again, a big fat spoiler, there's a character that you meet earlier in the game, which is really one of the most incredible sequences I've ever played through. Like, if you ever played a game and you've just had to put the controller down for a second and appreciate how incredible what it is that you're doing is.
Yeah.
This was one of those moments. There's this hotel manager that you meet who's dead, and he's haunting his own hotel.
Like you do.
Like you do. And he's definitely got issues, and you meet him and you try to help him. But you have also met all this personification of all of your darker instincts, and this version of you keeps coming out and teasing this guy and pissing him off and making him feel bad about himself for, you know, essentially being this chubby ghost who's haunting his own hotel. And you get to the point where you keep trying to help him because he is like a representation of a lot of your own doubts and fears and all that stuff. And by the time you get to the point where you really think you've helped him, you're the alternate version, Madeline, I believe is the character's called. You're Madeline, and the evil version of you is Madeline. Insults him enough and teases him enough that he eventually goes nuts and tries to kill you. He turns into a monster, and he's chasing after you. And when I say that the song that plays during this is really one of the best video game songs I've ever heard in my life, I do not exaggerate when I say it. This track is incredible, and it matches up to this whole experience of him trying to kill you. And so you're running for your life, and this amazing music is playing, and at the same time, you feel terrible because you failed to help this guy. Like, this guy's depression is more than you can fix, because you're not a professional. You're a person suffering from depression yourself, and you're trying to climb this mountain for yourself. You're trying to find yourself on this.
Right.
And you spent all this time trying to help this other person, and you can't save everyone.
That's such deep.
An amazing thing to have a game tell me that kind of story in this 16-bit platformer kind of thing. You know, it is inherently goofy in its own sort of way, but at the same time, it told that story incredibly well, and it didn't flat out say these things. You know, it didn't say these words, much like Super Metroid never says to you that you're supposed that's the baby Metroid and that you care about it when it gets shot by Mother Brain. It does that through gameplay, and I was just profoundly moved by it. And I feel like the game does betray itself a little bit by making that character okay in the very end of the game, like in the ending credits.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's okay. It does betray itself a little bit in that regard, but outside of that, even playing through that moment, I'm playing through all of the moments in this game. I'm playing through meeting the other guy who's climbing the mountain and you having to save him, and literally carry him through part of the game. Like, he gets trapped in a ball and you have to like throw him around and get him from point A to point B. This game's nuts. This game's simply nuts. And the fact that it didn't win Best Soundtrack at the Game Awards and Red Dead did, just baffles me. Because,
yeah, again, I promise you're wrong.
Yeah, I don't get that. I think Lena Rain, who's the woman who composed the soundtrack to this game, did an astonishing job. And it might, if to other people's ears, it may not be the best soundtrack of the year, but, there's the highs that this soundtrack achieves are so incredibly high. I've listened to this soundtrack beginning to end, and a lot of it is ambient stuff. And it just reminds me of my experience playing through it that I didn't even care. I'll just listen to it. The game's nuts. I can't believe it survived the number one spot since January, but nothing knocked it off for me. Nothing. Because nothing has affected me quite as much. Which is really saying something, because you just heard me go on and on about my 2 and 3, which I friggin' adored.
Well, Chris,
there you have it.
There it is. And, you know, we're going to get more into this in a couple weeks here, but damn, this was a good year, and next year looks to be just as fucking nuts.
Right, but in a, again, in a very different way, because 2017 was crazy. It was a crazy year for games, and when I finished off 2017, like, I played Mario Odyssey, I played Zelda, like, I played a new Blaster Master game, I played so many games that I couldn't believe were so good. I didn't know how 2018 was going to, how I was going to handle 2018. And then what 2018 threw at me was just a bunch of remarkably smaller but very affecting experiences all year long. And, like, that's not, these are just the best of the ones I played. Like, I don't even mention stuff like Pokemon Let's Go that I'm having a blast playing with my son, and games like Kiro Blaster. And there's so much I played this game that was so great this year. And 2019... I don't even know, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to that show and talk about stuff that's coming.
And that is next. That will be our next week's show. That is all for this. That is all for the SAG JGLDs of 2018. Join us next week for our 2019 preview. Like we just said, gaming is going through some really impressive years, and next year is shaping up to be another banner year in a lot of in a lot of different ways. I can't wait for next year. But it's late. It's time for us to go to bed. So once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris. That's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, where can people tweet at you?
At Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out the show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh, original content. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
This was a blast. Thank you. Thank you for everything you've said tonight, Dan. Thank you for another wonderful year of doing this podcast. And thank you, everybody who is listened, all of the new listeners we've gained this year. And really just thanks for letting us do this. Thank you, Stonehenge Gamer, for letting us do this. And post it to your audience. And
that's right.
That's it.
Somebody that's it, get us an Xbox One.
Yeah, do it. mail it to Dan. It's his turn.
That's right. My turn.
That's it for 2018 from me and Dan from the Stone Age Gamer Podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. Keep playing games.